Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Khosa at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SAFM Market Update with Money Web. But on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest round of warnings from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. They have issued 16 warnings over the last 13 days. We're going to get a sense of what is unfolding there and how consumers can keep themselves safe. Then we've also got a conversation with the team at Standard Bank taking a look at investor behavior over 2025 and what we can learn from it. We also have a conversation with the team at Discovery Bank, taking a look at what it is that they've unveiled today. They held a briefing today announcing some changes to their banking platform and banking app and what it is that consumers can look forward to from that perspective. And then we have a conversation with the team at South African Breweries, celebrating 130 years of their involvement in communities. But this time we're taking a look at it from the perspective of one of the beneficiaries of their involvement. We're going to be speaking to a company called Someone Investments around the impact that the SAB Foundation has had on their business. And then we're going to wrap up the show with another small business, a company called Saturated. We're going to speak to the founder and CEO of that business and get a sense of why they built that business.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as always, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. And joined on the line by senior analyst at Xness, Terence Hove, to take a look at market movements throughout the day and see if we can make sense of them. Terence, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. I suppose let's start with U.S. developments, most recent developments. The U.S. shutdown has finally ended. Markets not really having much of a reaction. The Nasdaq still down for the day. The S&P down at the moment. The U.S. dollar showing marginal movements. Are you seeing anything that points to the market being happy that the U.S. shutdown has ended?
Good evening, Jimmy. Great to be back on the show. Yeah, I think it's been one of the longest shutdown in the history of the U.S. government. And what we're seeing is market reactions. Typically, interestingly, when I was reading some research earlier this week, it spoke to indices typically rallying from optimism, when it comes to the end of the shutdown. But I think what we're also seeing in the indices is the broader market concern as well, especially around tech and the valuations, because that has seen quite a lot of volatility over the past, couple of days. And we've seen quite a significant drop as we're speaking now, compared to where the price has been on the US on the Nasdaq 100, for example. So, yeah, I think that the US markets at the moment are really under pressure. The government shutdown deal is not really done much to alleviate that pressure, and we're seeing the South African rand being one of the best performing emerging market currencies benefiting from that, breaking that 17 level as well. So, I think pessimism is building around the markets, especially, following that deal, which is rather odd as well. But the deal mechanics, this is through to until January 2026. So perhaps also the view is that the funding that's being provided is not long enough till perhaps another situation where there's another shutdown, a prolonged shutdown, and that could be being priced into the market as well.
Terence, you touched on the rand performing better, and I'm looking at it. I had a little conversation with our team a little earlier on. It is in levels we haven't seen since January or February of 2023. Clearly, the rand factors have come to the party as well as some of the dollar factors. Do we anticipate that we'll be able to kind of sustain the move below 17 Rand? I see we're back slightly above the 17 Rand level at the moment, but things are looking positive.
Yeah, I think to your point, things are looking positive. And if you look at those positive points, railing stocks, the local bulls, hitting all-time highs, increased investor sentiment, around bonds and riskier assets being an emerging market. The fiscal reforms, anticipated global rate cuts. So I think that the headwinds for the South African rand are really much in its favor, in the economic momentum for declining from the declining unemployment and strong infrastructure support. And of course, we're seeing gold doing very well, which is quite an important commodity for South Africa. They're traded globally. So there's a lot of factors that are playing into this being sustainable, to that question.
Terence, when we look at some of the other developments, I'm looking at equity markets, local equity markets having a good day as well, responding to the continued sentiment, or continued positive sentiment rather. If we look at international markets, they're a bit of a mixed bag as well. US markets are down at the moment. How do we kind of make sense of some of the driving factors at this stage in the year?
Yeah, I think the improved domestic sentiment following the midterm budget and positive jobs data, those have been amongst the key driving factors to the sentiment. And outside of just today or this week, the rand has been faring well over the past couple of months, and it's taking advantage of that dollar weakness that we've seen, because that's also playing in favor for the South African market being an attractive destination for investor appetite. And again, I think the policy outlook for South Africa in comparison to, say, the US, the data, key data has not been shared in the US, has been lagging because of the government shutdown. So a lot of markets, anticipation of that data has been more forecast than the actual data. So when we put that all together, we see why, for example, asset classes such as the equity market have been doing very well for in South Africa as an emerging market. Is that investor appetite increasing, and again sustained on that improved domestic sentiment?
Terence, in terms of the commodity markets, they seem to also be finding a bit of favor off the back of this overall positive sentiment that we're seeing. I see platinum pricing, palladium pricing all up, oil pricing also moderating, and even the gold price back towards that $4,200 a fine ounce level. Markets gearing up for one last rally before the end of the year, one last move to the upside and some profit taking. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Jimmy, we would want to get that rally because there's that fear of missing out in the all-time highs that we've seen, for example, when you mentioned gold. But when you're seeing gold pushing higher, that also speaks to that increased a risk element, it being a safe haven asset in that increase in flow. So of course, you'd like to attract that record highs for profit taking, as you've mentioned. But again, it's also indicating that increased risk sentiment in the market. But for the greater part, I think, when we look at, for example, indices, the US indices are also being an asset class that we've seen record highs as well, and the structural support they have, and the concerns that we have seen in terms of it pulling back. I think we will possibly see another rally, possibly, because at these lower levels, the risk still remains for gold to push higher, if we look at it broadly from there. If we look at the US indices in terms of the tech sector and the investment in the tech sector, and continued investment in the tech sector and inflows pushing up those indices higher. And then again, we'll see, I think, possible strong profit taking as well before that last hurrah for 2025, which has been remarkable for financial markets when we look at these levels across the board.
Terence, before I let you go, what are you looking at going into the rest of the year? I know it is a difficult time at the end of the year. I know at this point there's potentially a bit of exhaustion that's creeping into the markets and into investor sentiment. Is there anything you've got your eye on?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned, looking at the US indices, the concerns of overvaluation of stocks. But even with those concerns, when you see pullbacks, buyers come in quite strongly, as we're going into the holiday season, how much of that momentum is going to continue, and where does it position us going into 2026? Again, we've got the US Fed to announce whether they will move in December or not. And then that also brings another dynamic to the risk factor for 2025. So I think those will be somewhat the key things, because that will also have an effect on the South African market in terms of that investor sentiment and which way the capital is going to flow.
Some driving factors and thoughts around capital flow and where we go to for the rest of the year. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Mark, Senior Market Analyst at XNest, Terence Hove, for joining us to get a sense of markets and what's moving them.
I think it's time for an adventure. We could visit the grandkids, check on a London apartment while we're there, or we could meet them in Dubai and look at properties along the way.
Ah, why settle in one place when you can be a global citizen? If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect your global banking, lending, and investments on a single platform. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
So with the midterm budget policy statement taking place yesterday, we didn't get the opportunity to do our Warning Wednesdays. So it's Warning Thursdays. I'm joined on the line by the Divisional Executive for Enforcement at the FSCA, that is the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Gerard van Deventer, to take a look at the latest round of warnings from the FSCA and see what we make of them. Well, Gerard, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. 16 warnings in 13 days. That's not a healthy average, and I can imagine that is serious cause for concern.
Yes, good day, Jimmy, and thank you for having me back. It is such an important message, and you are so good at spreading this, so we do appreciate it. Yes, and you know what, Jimmy, you need to see that statistic against the bigger picture, and that is we only warn, issue warnings when it has something to do with our regulatory net, and in other words, something to do with investments or a financial product. So this is actually a small part of the bigger picture, as you would very much know. There are the romance scams, there are the clear-to-zone type of franchise scams, etc. So it's so much bigger. And yes, it certainly keeps us busy. It is so unfortunate, and it is 100% enabled by technology.
Gerard, I want to look into just how much worse these scams have gotten. You and I have these conversations as often as we can on this platform. I know there's some work that we do with the FSCA as well to ensure that we can get as much awareness out about these conversations. But it seems as though the more we have these conversations, the more the scammers and the impersonators double down on the work that they're doing. What are they using now?
Yes, that you're absolutely right. And it's as if they're reacting to our warnings. You know, and a really good example of that, Jimmy, is we, with every warning we put out, there's a standard paragraph that say, please check that this person is a regulated entity, a licensed entity. So, of course, as you know, what has increased dramatically is impersonations. So now the offer looks like it comes from a licensed entity. It looks like it's a kind of a reaction to that. So that's the one thing, that impersonations has increased a lot, and they've become more sophisticated. And you don't need to run that for a long time. Of course, eventually Nedbank or Alex Forbes, whoever, or us will pick it up, and we will put the warning out. But by that time, a lot of money is down the drain. And of course, I think the other obvious point is that they use social media platforms. That is actually where we are now. Your classic scams, as we saw some time ago, doesn't exist anymore. Social media platform is such a brilliant place for scammers to do to trade their wares. So that is absolutely what's happening, and you know, if we are going to talk about how can it be avoided, that will be my number one point, to stay away from social media platforms when you talk about investments.
Gerard, some of these impersonations involve, as you rightly alluded to, recognized institutions. I mean, I'm thinking of Alex Forbes, I'm thinking of the likes of Capitec that have been impersonated, and for a lot of it, for South Africans, it's well-known organizations that are being impersonated and companies that are legitimate. So how then do we start to tell the difference between whether this is a legitimate conversation with the regulated party? Because when they impersonate these parties, they use all the correct information. They use the correct FSP numbers and all of that.
You make such a good point. Like I said, it's getting more sophisticated and much better at it. And I can tell you that notwithstanding the job I'm in and I've been in for longer than I care to remember, I cannot tell the difference. The only way I can tell the difference is that the offer is unrealistic. But I think, you know, a few things. And the first one is, if you see this offer from a reputable financial manager, a licensed financial manager, the first question you have to ask yourself is, will this entity make offers on social media? And the answer is going to be no. They might do a little bit of advertising and indirect advertising, which of course also brings in the whole issue of influencers and finfluencers, but they are not going to make offers on social media. So that's your first thing. You have to ask yourself that. But it has become a lot more difficult to check, unfortunately. The days are gone where we can just say, make sure you work with a regulated entity. It's not that simple anymore. So it really comes back to this, Jimmy, and that is the due diligence of the public. They have to protect themselves. And that due diligence before they spend one cent is so important. And if we talk about that due diligence, I would simply say the minimum that you have to do is, if you get an offer like this, find an independent source to find a contact details for the entity. So if they claim it's Nedbank, find an independent source, another website or whatever the case may be, to find contact details of Nedbank and speak to them before you spend any money. You can also ask the FECA. And then, of course, I think another thing that we must also not lose sight of, that you and I have spoken about before, if you have had some dealings with a financial services provider in the past, in other words, if there's an advisor somewhere in the wings that you trust, or if you can just, if you know there's one in your town or whatever the case may be, ask them, what do you think of this offer? Because I have all the faith in the world that our financial advisors will be able to tell you immediately that something is a scam, because they all know how tough it is to make a decent return. So I think that would be, you know, that would be my advice, is do your due diligence, but from an independent source of information.
Gerard, before I let you go, I want to get a sense of the role that you touched on, finfluencers, influencers. We're seeing the rise of individuals communicating things, and in the day and age that you mentioned, the social media age that we find ourselves in, sometimes it's unavoidable that you'll encounter these individuals. How do we discern between the good and the bad?
Yes, that's a really good question, and you are absolutely right. You can't avoid having contact with influencers and finfluencers, but let me just stop there and say this is not influencer bashing from the FECA side or from my side. The truth of the matter is, maybe a little bit of an irony in there is a fair amount of influencers and finfluencers that does really good work. So what I'm referring to, Jimmy, is we've come across quite a few of these people that will, for instance, repeat our warnings. And I mean, I'm very grateful for that, you know, that will leapfrog the warnings and the messages very much the way that you do. And I'm very grateful for that. There's some of them that will look at something and then issue their own warning, so to speak. And all of that is absolutely great. And there might even be some of them that actually are licensed and they are, you know, they are providing good advice. The problem, of course, is that, and perhaps it's not all that well known that you need a license, but the problem is, of course, the influencers that's out there and that have either organic content on their platform, and that amounts to financial advice or a recommendation, that's not allowed. And the fact that it's a personal experience, because I've heard this discussion come up a lot internationally, actually, because it's not just South Africa that's got this problem. But what if it's a personal experience? Why I can't relay that? If that personal experience you're relaying to a group of people amounts to a recommendation, then you're not allowed to do it. But of course, then take one step further. If you think about paid content, that's a problem. And it's not a problem because you need a license when you're paid for the advice. That's not actually an issue. The problem is then there's absolutely no objectivity in that advice. There's a massive conflict of interest. And such a person would never get a license because conflict of interest is one of the cornerstones of our code of conduct and our regulatory framework. So the whole issue with influencers, we've just received a really good survey, and FECA, not just enforcement, are working together to take that forward. And we need to think about a solution here to allow the good guys to spread the word and to get to the people who's doing unregistered business, either on purpose or because they don't know, and sort that out, because it's very powerful people. There's no doubt about that.
Well, as someone who has almost a decade of experience in financial services, I, for one, know how difficult it can be to navigate these waters. And that is why we have these conversations. That is why we're always telling you folks to be even more careful out there with where you place your money and the due diligence that you do on these companies and these individuals. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you, as always, to the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, Gerard van Diefenter, for joining us to take a look at the latest round of warnings from the FSCA and how consumers can protect themselves.
Hey, hey,
what's wrong, Vusi?
Just my last trip.
What happened?
I picked him up next to a sold sign outside his house. When I offered to put his bag in a boot, he said no.
Yeah?
It wasn't that heavy. It only had what was left of his life in it.
Don't become collateral damage to riot strikes or terrorism. One word can rewrite your story. Sasria, as the only company in South Africa that insures you against civil unrest, Sasria ensures that when things go bad, Sasria makes good. Go to sasria.co.za or contact your insurer or broker. Sasria is an authorized FSP. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. 2025 has certainly been a roller coaster of a ride for investments and investment decisions. And along the way, investors have had to adjust how they approach investments. We're going to be taking a look at the behavioral patterns of investors throughout the 2025 year and what we can make sense of there. Joined on the line by the lead specialist for investment propositions at Standard Bank Group Investments, Brandon Naidoo, to take a look at some of these investment trends and see what we make of them. Brandon, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. The year's certainly been quite the adventurous one for investors. Whether you're a seasoned investor, whether you're a novice investor, there has been a lot that has happened in this year. How have investors taken to investment decisions from a behavioral perspective?
Hi, Jimmy. Hi to your listeners. As you say, an eventful year, but don't we say that every year, right?
We do.
as if we've been saying that for a while. Look, I think this year has been unique in the sense that we've had both local and global issues at play, and investor behavior, surprisingly, hasn't changed. We still tend to listen to the noise that's happening globally and locally and make investment decisions based on that, which you and I know history tells us is not the way to go about things. So unfortunately, still making some of the old mistakes, if I can call it that.
Brandon, with everything that has been happening in the market, there has been an increase in volatility. There's been an increase in FOMO, people not wanting to miss out on the moves, people wondering if it's too late to get in. How has all of this affected what investors have been doing, or at least how they've been approaching their investments? We know that wherever money is involved, and particularly in the investment space, it is an emotional conversation.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to understand where this emotion or where this behavior comes from. And with money, I think a lot of that is our background, our upbringing. What relationship with money did we have growing up? Did we have too little, too much, as an example? I think that really impacts the behavior that we see today. And then, of course, as you say, watching social media and seeing others live their best life does give us that feeling of FOMO. And therefore, you see decisions being made to try and keep up with the Joneses rather than perhaps listening to the more sound advice that comes from financial advisors or people in the financial sort of ecosystem. And unfortunately, the decisions that we've seen is people chasing onto trends. So the trend is your friend until the end. And unfortunately, people have jumped onto investments that have either run really hard and bought in at the top, as it were. And traditionally, what we will end up seeing is people selling out as soon as that investment falls. And I think Investments 101 teaches us the quickest way to lose money is to buy high and sell low. And at occasions in this year, we have definitely seen that.
Brandon, you brought up two important things around wanting to get in on whatever trends are happening, but also alluding to the fact that we're seeing more and more investors taking decisions for themselves. I think we live in an age where technology allows for self-investment in a better way than it did perhaps 10 years ago. And that's fueling a completely different market because now everybody can get involved, which might not necessarily be a good thing if you think about things like portfolio weightings and how diversification builds into a portfolio. These are conversations that really you should be approaching with care and caution.
Look, I think there's positives to making investments as widely available as possible and ensuring that people can use their smartphone to invest as an example. I think there's definitely positives behind that. However, as you clearly point out, it needs to be done responsibly. I think product providers out there also have a role to play in ensuring that some education is taking place with all clients to ensure that they understand what they're getting into, what are the potential benefits, what are some of the pitfalls, because the other side of the coin is, although a lot of this is positive, you could have people buying things they don't understand just because they look at a graph and see it went, you know, really high, really quickly, and I want some of that. So I think it's a bit of both. And I just want to say that even though lots of people have gone to self-directed investments, it's not the case that they are ditching their financial advisor in order to do that. Some of them still maintain that relationship with a financial advisor for, let's call it, their core portfolio, their most important holdings. And then on the side, as it were, tend to go the direct route or the self-directed route.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with self-managed investments. Of course, it is part of the world that we live in today. Brandon, I want to take a look at the balance between the two. And balance particularly from a decision-making perspective and a behavioral perspective. Can we get just some thoughts around the importance of striking that balance, number one, and being able to lean on the help of organizations like Standard Bank that actually offer behavioral guidance? I think those that are new to the investment world that don't understand things like emotional triggers would benefit from understanding that, hey, this is, you're not alone in this journey.
No, absolutely. And I think the balance that you speak about, let's think about what are the most important goals in a general person's life, right? So, of course, it's age dependent. Depending on which stage of your life cycle you're in, you would have differing needs. But people think about long-term investments, things like retirement, some very short-term investments, things like having an emergency fund, saving for my kids' education. It could be, you know, a wedding, a house, a car. There's a variety of goals at play. So I think, number one, let's ensure we have a clear goal that we understand and that means something to us, because that's going to impact whether or not I'm sticky with this investment, right? So I have a clear goal, number one. Two, I need diversification. That word that that we all know, right? The word that we all know and understand. But it's interesting when you talk about diversification, like what does that really mean? What are you saying? Diversify locally and offshore, diversify across sectors, across industries, across geographies. Like that word can be really deep. And I think that when you truly understand what diversification can give you access to, it becomes a really strong point. And then after setting clear goals and after ensuring that there's diversification, I think review that. Review that on an ongoing basis, whether that's once a year or twice a year. Of course, if you've got a financial planning professional to do that review with you, who's unbiased, can give you that sort of bird's eye view on your overall portfolio, great. But if you have decided to do that review by yourself, that's also okay. But when you want to make changes, ask yourself the question, okay, have my goals changed? Because if your goals have changed, sure, then that warrants you going in and making some changes in your overall investment. But if those goals have not changed and the underlying fund managers, as an example, are doing exactly what they're supposed to, that doesn't warrant a switch. So the so-called switch or stay conundrum, which is what a lot of investors find themselves in, should be answered with the end goal in mind. And when you're doing these reviews and you have these questions top of mind, let's remember, we only should be switching if I've changed a goal or my overall strategy has changed, or I've got an underperforming manager over the long term across different cycles, not two or three bad months. That's not the decision.
Understanding your behavioral patterns could potentially be the difference between achieving your long-term investment goals and making some really interesting investment decisions. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the lead specialist for investment propositions at Standard Bank Group Investments, Brandon Naidu, for joining us to take a look at investment behavior. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best Forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
At 12 o'clock today, Discovery Bank announced that they would be adding several new services and products to their banking app. We're going to be taking a look at what it is that they are putting together, and we're going to be seeing how this is going to impact Discovery Bank customers. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer of Discovery Bank, Hilton Kellner, to take a look at these changes. Hilton, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. As one of South Africa's fastest growing banks, especially a bank that is so heavily focused on being a digital banking platform, take us through what it is that you've innovated this time around.
So the launch today covers a number of key areas. In particular, we've expanded a lot of the services that we offer in the Discovery Bank app for Discovery clients. It's now very much the channel of choice for digital interactions across the entire Discovery group. So you can access your health insurance, life insurance, motor insurance, investments, all via the Discovery Bank app now. And you can actually be able to get a motor insurance quote in literally seconds using all of the data that we have for the individual, for the client, and to be able to then rate them, to give them the most accurate motor insurance quote in the bank app in a few taps. So significantly expanding what we offer to Discovery clients. We also have incorporated other financial services products and platforms like Luno for crypto assets. So our clients can fund their crypto accounts, their wallets, and then trade in over 50 different crypto assets using all of the liquidity that's available on the Luno platform, and you know, there are about 6 million South Africans that have crypto assets and wallets today. So it really, you know, it's mainstream, and the regulatory environment is such that it's really supporting the kind of the growth of that segment. So for Discovery Bank clients, they can now invest and trade in their crypto assets from the kind of the safety and convenience of their bank app. So a lot of enhancements to the app itself. We've enhanced some of the AI capabilities for our clients to be able to effectively access support and service via our WhatsApp channel. And then a really exciting and important enhancement is our investment using AI in enabling our clients to have additional levels of security around all of their transactions. So now we're effectively providing an AI overlay to every single transaction that our clients process looking at the different factors that go into that transaction based on the individual's personal financial behaviors and those of the beneficiary or the merchant that they're transacting with. And if we detect anything out of the ordinary, then we immediately flag what we call a trust alert. The screen turns red, and it gives the client an important moment to pause and confirm and really kind of check that they are transacting with who they think they are. So a lot of enhancements that we're rolling out, from digital banking all the way through to service and support, and then enhanced security features for our clients, as well as a host of shared value rewards that make managing your money a lot more valuable for our clients with our Discovery Miles program. So a lot there.
Hilton, I'm glad you brought up the security and the safety aspects of the services that we now deal with in the digital world. I mean, we find ourselves in an era where people are being impersonated, banks are being impersonated, services. We find a lot of trust is needed when dealing with these platforms and services. When I look at the Discovery ecosystem, and I must confess, I am part of the ecosystem, as a disclaimer for those out there that are listening, I'm starting to see that it's more and more around protecting the users of the ecosystem itself, similar to how some other companies are doing it in their various spaces, and we won't get into that. But I want to get your thoughts from a Discovery perspective around the importance of securing your customers, securing your transactions, and making sure that when you onboard service providers like the Lunos that you've now integrated with, you're able to extend your bandwidth of trust to these organizations too.
Yeah, so that's exactly what is being provided through partnerships like the Luno one, where the integrations are effectively set up to provide the kind of the full bank security and convenience to our clients, but then access on kind of a fully authenticated, integrated basis, the partner's capabilities being pricing and the custodianship. So it leverages, I suppose, the skills and the competences of both parties. From our perspective, you know, we've invested heavily in a number of proprietary features for our clients. A few months ago, we launched what we call a digital account vault, which allows clients to effectively secure with their own code the accounts within their bank app. So applying a second layer of protection for the most valuable accounts that they have in the bank app. So even if your phone is stolen and your passcodes are cracked, the actual accounts that you want to protect have an additional layer. And in addition, if you're accessing those under duress, a panic code that notifies us that the accounts are being accessed under duress by the client. So a whole host of additional security layers, and then the trust alert that we launched or spoke about today is really about an intelligent check that scores every single transaction in real time. And when we do identify that risk is elevated because of the specifics of that transaction, then the client gets a clear warning, and they can pause, review, or choose what to do next. So it's really about enabling clients to have multiple layers of security and additional protection.
Building a bank that meets the needs of its users now and into the future, that is the aim of a Discovery Bank, but at the same time ensuring that these users remain secure and protected. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the CEO of Discovery Bank, Hilton Kellner, for joining us to take a look at some new innovations in their banking products and their banking services, and also how they continue to protect their customers.
Hey, what's wrong, Vusi?
Just my last trip.
What happened?
I picked him up next to a soul sign outside his house. When I offered to put his bag in a boot, he said no.
Yeah?
It wasn't that heavy. It only had what was left of his life in it.
Don't become collateral damage to riots, strikes, or terrorism. One word can rewrite your story. Sasria. As the only company in South Africa that insures you against civil unrest, Sasria ensures that when things go bad, Sasria makes good. Go to sasria.co.za or contact your insurer or broker. Sasria is an authorized FSP. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. As we continue to reflect on 130 years of South African breweries in South Africa, the SAB Foundation has been instrumental in supporting small businesses and championing innovation. And we have the privilege of speaking to a product of this support in the form of the founder and CEO of a business called Someone Investments, Khurula Baloyi. She joins me on the line now to get a sense of how it is that the SAB Foundation has impacted her business. Khurula, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with, what is Someone Investments? Tell us about your business. Tell us about how you built the business and why you built it.
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for having me. Khurula Baloyi, and I am the CEO and founder of Someone Investments. And yeah, to be honest, we started off with the bold idea that when everyday South Africans come together, and in this instance, Stokvels, they can build real wealth and drive lasting impact. Right. So we like to think of ourselves as sitting at the intersection of finance, technology and community, because what we do at Someone Investments is we connect Stokvels looking to grow their money with credible township and rural based businesses that need financing to grow. And the result of that is that Stokvels get to grow their money and local entrepreneurs gain access to funding that they would have not ordinarily been able to receive. And so what we end up having is a community-based investment model, or as some might call it, a smart investment platform that makes investing familiar, communal, and within reach.
So Khurula, tell me then how you got involved with the SAB Foundation. Where did they intersect with your business, and what was that journey like?
Yeah, I mean, I had been following the SAB Social Innovation Awards for a few years now. And it quickly became clear that the foundation's commitment to supporting, you know, social innovators and entrepreneurs aligned perfectly with our mission of making investments accessible for Stokvels. And what really stood out for me was feedback from the previous alumni, you know, the SAP Foundation previous alumni. And I kid you not, Jimmy, like every single one of them spoke very highly of the program and encouraged us to apply. And watching how their businesses had grown after being part of the SAB Foundation showed us just how intentional the foundation was at helping social innovators thrive. And it didn't seem like it was another tick box exercise for them. It was genuine passion. And you can see that through my engagements with the team. And so it was a no-brainer for us to apply for the Social Innovation Awards for this year. And thankfully for us, we came out victorious.
Khurula, tell us about how you've seen the foundation's impact on your business personally. I can imagine you have your own goals and ambitions for how you want the business to grow. Tell us about just your experience with the support that the foundation has provided you.
Yeah, you know, so for us, firstly, the financial support is, you know, just off the bat is absolutely incredible. You know, in business, one of the things that you need is money. So just having that financial support is instrumental. But secondly, it's all the other things now, things that possibly money, you know, might not be able to do for you. And what the SAB Foundation has been able to do for us is to provide us a community of other social innovators. I've walked into many rooms of other entrepreneurs, and walking in rooms with social entrepreneurs is a completely different environment altogether. You suddenly start to feel that your crazy ideas of trying to change the world and do good aren't so crazy anymore. And so just having that community to be able to support you is incredible. Their networks are incredibly extensive. I'm sure they're tired of me right now, but every time I'll be like, hey, do you know a person in X space? And they'll pop up with two or three names. They'll provide an intro. You know, those kind of things are instrumental. Because it's one thing me, someone that they don't know, knocking on their door. It's another thing altogether when someone as credible as the SAB Foundation, you know, knocks on the door with you. You suddenly are at least able to get inside and have a meeting. And that makes all the difference.
Khurula, you touched on the fact that social innovators face slightly different challenges to perhaps what other entrepreneurs might face. I want to get your thoughts around the value of social innovation at this point in the communities that we find ourselves in the South Africa that we find ourselves in. There are a lot of challenges that we are having to face already as a country. But take us through how you see the role of social innovators fitting into some of these challenges.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I look back at my path, like my career path before even, you know, starting Someone Investments, and I was working as an investment analyst. And I don't think I'd be making the same kind of difference as I am now. And you almost have to personalize the social innovation for you, right? Because when I look at sort of the clients, you know, whether it's high net worth individuals or large institutions, I think they would be okay without me. You know, I think they'll still be able to generate good returns on their investments. But when I look at the stock files that we work with, it's different. You know, we are working with, I think it's over 70% of them are first-time investors, right? So effectively, without Someone Investments, many of our stock files that we work with might have never been able to start their investment journey. And that, for me, is what social innovation is all about. It's about taking a step back, looking in your community, looking at the gaps that are there, looking at the skill sets that you have and thinking to yourself, okay, what is it then that community needs me to do in order to make a difference? And there are so many gaps that we see. Through our work, you're suddenly then able to create employment because you've stepped out of a system and created another system. And what that does is it creates other jobs for other people, whether it's directly through, you know, people that can work at Someone Investments or indirectly through the jobs that are created from the businesses that the stock files we support are able to fund. And you start to see the ripple effect of the work that you're doing. And that is absolutely incredible. I didn't think we started Someone Investments to create jobs, but somehow, you know, the ripple effect of trying to provide access to financing and trying to provide support for township entrepreneurs ends up creating employment unintentionally so, you know, which is the power of social innovation.
The power of social innovation indeed, and having a partner like the SAB Foundation to support you through it. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Kurula Baloyi, the founder and CEO of Someone Investments, for joining us to take a look at her business and the support it's received from the SAB Foundation. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp. Not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. And it's time for SME of the Week, where we spotlight a small business and hopefully help them do a little bit better because you're listening and you know more about them. This week's small business is a company called Saturated. I'm joined on the line by the founder and CEO of the business, Mamelo Mofokeng, to take a look at her business and get a sense of what she does. Mamelo, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Saturated. What is it that you guys do?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Well, Saturated is a sector agnostic, which pretty much means we work across different industries with mainly one core principle, which is mainly to help people and businesses stand out in a saturated market.
Mamelo, why did you build this business?
Well, we built this business because we were inspired by the reality of today's world, which is pretty much that everyone is competing for attention. So we're competing as individuals, as SMMEs, as corporates, as startups, as organizations. So we saw that it would be a great opportunity to see these, to actually leverage how these brilliant businesses struggle, not because they lack the talent or the potential, but because they struggle to stand out in what we call a saturated market.
Now, Mamelo, you mentioned that the business is sector agnostic. What services do you provide to the clients that you service?
So we offer a full suite of solutions that pretty much supports businesses' growth from every angle. So we have our digital consultancies, where we have brand strategy, product strategy, business strategy and transformation. Then we have our marketing and creative services. So this involves your digital marketing campaigns, your social media, your branding and graphic design. And then lastly, we have your product development. So this looks at your web and your app development, your digital platform development, your e-learning platforms and your tech solutions that will assist your everyday SMEs and your enterprises.
Mamelo, those that are out there wanting to find out how the business works, how they reach out to you, how they engage with your services, how do they contact you and how do you conduct your engagements?
Okay, so we are quite open and clear. So you can check out our website on www.saturated.africa, where you can actually book an appointment with us or a consultation where we can understand your problem. You can also reach out on our WhatsApp. You'll see the icon there on our website. And on all our social media, we are at saturated_Africa. And yeah, just feel free to connect with us and we will definitely engage and take it from there.
Mamelo, what would you say has been some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome as a business in the ICT space? Understanding that, of course, we do live in a more digital age than what we used to. How has that affected your business and how are you finding some of the challenges you've had to overcome?
I think a lot of the challenges really came from really pushing forward in terms of all the different types of solutions that are out there, finding what works for you and not necessarily just jumping the gun on what you see as a solution for your problem. So really taking the time to really analyze the data that you have, understand the systems that you have, and actually look at how you can optimize what already exists just to greater your business presence, your business strategy, and just understanding where your market is.
Mamelo, tell me more about the training that you do. I see on the website the business does offer training in digital skills. And as we said, we live in a digital age where it is important to have these skills, especially to ensure that you continue to remain employable. Tell me about the training services that you guys offer.
So we do different types of training services. This can vary from your workshops in terms of understanding your social media, understanding your brand. And this can also go into technical, where you can maybe want to learn how to build your own website, how to manage your store, how to manage the tools that are there in terms of the integrations and how to better optimize your business systems. So we do a lot of training, especially what we've realized is we have to kind of start from a basic level upwards and understanding where your skill set is and where you want to go. And that does vary from your different digital skills services, your digital marketing, your web development services, and a bit of software development services as well.
Mamelo, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts around what your hope is for the business, what your dream is for the business, and what you want to achieve with it going forward.
I really would like to really continue to kind of spread where we are. What I've realized is it's important to really start small, to stay consistent and embrace technology very early because you get to grow with it. What's there is Africa has a lot of talent and we just need the platforms and we need to also give ourselves the platform to go out there and go into the market. So it's really just about taking on Africa and beyond.
Taking on Africa and beyond, that's certainly quite the challenge and quite the ambitious target there. We wish you all of the best of luck to you and your business, Mamelo. That's Mamelo Mofokeng, the founder and CEO of Saturated, joining us for this week's SME. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP. 46669. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's the show for today, folks. That's the show for the week. We made it through the midterm budget policy statement. The Rand is stronger. We go into the weekend with a positive equity market. And that's enough from our side. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Coase is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. So from my side, good night.